The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. It'll be a little bit shorter one, which is weird to say because my guest is Thomas Batchelder, but there's a giant event coming up. For anyone who doesn't know, there are very few winemakers in Canada better than Thomas Batchelder. This guy is an absolute rock star when it comes to Pinot, Gamay, Chardonnay. He's been making wines in Oregon and Burgundy and here in Ontario for years and years. One of the champions, one of the legends of all things Niagara wine. And we're sitting in the Batcave right now. Thomas, good morning. Thanks for doing the pod.
Bonjour, Mathieu.
I dropped French after grade nine. I think you said hello. Let's just start here. You have a massive release, your 2023 vintage. I think you have like 20, is it 23 different wines you got here?
So it's exactly 14 white terroirs. I'll explain that in a minute. And 9 Pinot Noirs. Now, we've done 9 Pinot Noir before, and I don't even want to say 9 Pinot Noir. I want to say 9 different terroirs of Pinot Noir. The 14 whites, there's more white because there's more Chardonnay in Niagara, and we go from the very bottom, the very northeastern bit of Niagara on the Lake, just outside of Old Town, right until the outskirts of the Hamilton vineyards, of which there are some. And there's more Chardonnay across that whole strip. And I've got to tell you, but the first wine is a Pinot Blanc Old Vines done from the Kirby Vineyard on line one.
Yeah, Scott Kirby, been on the pod, great Merlot. And this is a new project, the Pinot Blancs. Is a fairly new project.
Yeah, so yeah, we've done it 3 years now, but of course we're only releasing the 23. And the thing to know is back when we were doing Batchelder Bourgogne in Burgundy, as well as Batchelder Oregon, from 9 to 15, we did all three countries, and it was a crazy life. But back then, we did a Sauvignon des Beaunes that was pure Pinot Blanc. And I learned back then, it can resemble Chardonnay. The main thing is to get the terroir out of that Pinot Blanc, and you ferment it like you would a Chardonnay in neutral Burgundian barrels and in puncheons, the bigger 500-liter barrels, so that it's pristine still. Not quite like a stainless version. It's very terroir, and it's a very provocative wine to taste against the Niagara Lake Chardonnays.
How important is it for you to continue to get this message out? And you're one of the leaders in this, just about terroir and about how there is a difference in the vineyards near Hamilton. Leaning posts are beautiful. And then when you get to Niagara on the Lake, it can be bigger and it can be hotter. And then, you know, the bench versus St. David's. Like, how important is that for you for just the legitimacy and the continued growth of wines of Niagara?
It's, you know, it's my life's work. And I really want to get Niagara known. I'm a Burgundian I'm not a Burgundian by birth. I'm a Burgundian by adoption. It's my spiritual hometown. But I got to tell you, Niagara is so exciting right now. We have a limestone. Nobody knows about it. And the soils are so mixed up, not just by the retreat of the glaciers, but by the flow of all these 50 creeks we have that were much wider back in the day, you know. And one of the reasons we're doing this big, big release is we're telling people as we do it, we're doing less wines after this, because in doing this somewhat altruistically, we found out what really resonates with us, but also with the public here and abroad. So we want to make Niagara known. So we're kind of switching the focus a little. We're going to make less terroirs in the future and more of the ones that really resonate with people everywhere. And then we'll be able to export more. And that's the next job we want to do for Niagara. So these terroirs exist. Mm-hmm. Here's 8 Chardonnays. Sorry, we don't have 13 today. You know, but 8's pretty good.
Yes.
That's the future, 24 and 25.
What needs to happen so that these wines become normal at the wine shops and the restaurants in, say, London, England, of course?
What needs to happen is we need to lead in export with our top wines. And we can never please everybody because we're too small. Alsace, France, doesn't try to please everybody, but everybody knows what Alsace does. I don't always feel like having an Alsace Pinot Blanc, for instance. I might want a Burgundian Pinot Blanc, which is an unknown category, as I just said, but I know what Alsace is. And when I see it on the shelf, I think about it. Alsace is forever niche. we will be forever niche. But let us be known for our great terroirs instead of for huge blends that are trying to compete with countries that have much more yield than we do. We have small yield and high labor costs and tough winters. So we need to make great wines that sing of the cool sites they're on. And you know what, Matt, leading to your next question, we're still cool. The harvest date has not moved in Niagara since I got here. So I'm only going to attest to that. In 03, we have never picked before the middle of September, unless they're young vines. Young vines have very little yield, and so they ripen faster. The vine doesn't have much to do. But for normally mature vines, not even old vines, things have never come in before the 15th of September. And that is beautiful. With Burgundy, my beloved Burgundy, harvesting most of the time in late August. When I did school there in 92 and 93, the harvest date was like September 12th. It's changed in two decades. And let's hope it bounces back. But in the meantime, there's a niche for us to mine. Limestone, cool climate. Are the wines as rich as Burgundy, the Pinots? Maybe not. But do they sing of their place? They certainly do.
How was the 2023 vintage for you?
The 2023 vintage was initially a big worry because 22, we had had winter kill. Because 21 was a big vintage, so the vines didn't harden off, which means the shoots didn't turn from green to brown in time for the winter. They spent so long in 21 ripening the huge crop, Mama Vine, ripen them through the rain and stuff that we had in 21, but then didn't harden off perfectly. 22 winter comes, bing, and there's a minus 21 one day. Vineyards get ripped out of Niagara Lake because the vines died. Up here on the bench, we didn't have any vine death, but we had bud loss for the next year. So 22 becomes a small crop. Luckily, 22 was not a hot summer. Small crop plus hot summer equals jam. We avoided that, and as you know, 22 was a great vintage for Niagara. So 23, we got another big vintage again because the vines in 22 had SFA to do. They had very little to ripen. So in 23 here, they had to do a long year to get the big crop ripe again. And by God, they hardened off at the end because we had a mild autumn. So we have lots of 23, and it's very good. The wines are not. I'm always talking Burgundian grapes, right? I'm not going to comment on other people's beautiful Cabernet Francs and Cab Sauv and Syrahs. But for the Burgundian grapes, which are for us, you know, Pinots, Noir and Blanc, we say, and then Chardonnay and Gamay Noir, for those grapes, they all got ripe. There was a lot of yield, but the summer was warmer. So here we had a lot of yield, warmer summer, not a hot year taste because the vine struggled to mature that big a crop. So the viticulturists and the winemakers were very wise, and we've made a great usable year. Nobody's taking any price hikes because there's lots of wine, and that's a good place to be. Nobody wants the prices to go up.
No.
You know, we don't want them to go up because we want to sell our wine.
What should people need to know? And I always hate asking this question because you never want to do generalizations, you know, like this area is going to taste like this. And mm-hmm. Like I was talking to a New Zealand winemaker and to, you know, compare the difference between Nelson and Central Otago. It's not fair. It's too big. But in general, if someone sees your wine or another Niagara wine and they see Wismer versus if they see Wingfield, like what are just Spencer Morgan? What are some of the differences in these vineyards? Just for people that are listening to this, that see these vineyard names on Niagara wines, sort of general expectations.
Right. So that's a great question. And I think one thing we can say is Niagara on the lake, which is lower altitude, it's about 80 meters above sea level. And it's that whole area outside of Niagara on the lake before you get up to the Queensway or the bench. There is a bench in Niagara Lake, but Niagara on the lake as Chardonnay does have a slightly rounder, proud, pleasy affair going on. It still has good minerality. So I love saying, if you went to Cali and you were tasting great Chardonnays and you poured a Niagara on the lake, a good Chardonnay from Niagara Lake in California, people would go, whoa, this is like Burgundy. It's so cool climate. I love it. Believe me, I've done it. And not pouring blind, just showing them. Here, though, where we can make the distinction, the bench, which is, you know, between the Niagara River in the east, mm-hmm. just across from Niagara Falls and Buffalo, all the way to Grimsby Hillside, which is on the edge of Hamilton, all that bench or escarpment, the bench is a series of benches on the escarpment, that whole bench is stuffed with limestone. So we get much more oyster shelly, flinty, sometimes some reduction, which means just a mineral flavor and great richness. It ripens a little later than Niagara Lake. So remember, when you ripen later to get to the same sugar level or potential alcohol, say 12, if it takes you longer to do it, the vine stuffs her babies, the grapes. It's la vigne, so she is a mama, you know, and she stuffs her babies with more stuff, and that becomes dry extract, mouthfeel, and of course, minerality, sense of place. So you can always expect the bench vineyards, especially of Jordan and Vineland, which together, taken together, are called 20 Mile Bench, Beamsville and Grimsby, which taken together are called Beamsville Bench. Those appellations are going to be, hate to say it, the most Burgundian, the ones that remind people most of Burgundy while still maintaining their own identity. But one of the reasons Batchelder wanted to do this, and I always talk about Batchelder in the third person because it's not just me, and it's not just Mary who does most of the work, but it's all of us. It's a couple of investors that we have. It's everybody who helps us when we're over at Southbrook, and everybody comes helps me here in the cellar, although I am a bit of a monk that way. I love to do my stuff alone. But I got to tell you, don't become a bench snob as good as it is, because our reason for doing Niagara in the Lake is because we wanted to show the whole peninsula done by the same hand, the same set of eyes, the same intent. So for instance, one of my favorite comparisons is if you take a Stratus or a Ferox Chardonnay, great houses from Niagara Lake, Four Mile Creek, and you taste it against a Hidden Bench from Beamsville, great house, or a 30 Bench, great Chardonnays. Well, they taste totally different because it's Niagara Lake and Bench, but also different house styles. So we've eliminated the difference in the house style, you know, so people can really come down to the Batcave or go to the LCBO or go in a restaurant, look online at our terroir catalog, which you have, a beta copy of.
Yep.
And that terroir catalog, it's funny because I never thought of it this way. There's no prices or bottles in it. It's just a description of terroir. Well, what are you trying to sell me with this catalog? We're trying to sell terroir so that it exists. And so that'll be online in mid-December. At batchelderniagara.com. Just go there. Don't have to buy anything. Just click on it and read about all these terroirs and our opinions of them. And then you can go to people like Matt Koss and other wine writers and take their take on them. But our take on them is why they are what they're like. Why are they like that? It's because where they come from. Because we do them all the same.
By the way, I had your 2020 Parky Pinot Noir. So much floral, so much perfume. And just led by kind of a little bit of like a brooding dark fruit sort of characteristic. It was fantastic.
It is. You described it perfectly. That part of the Vineland Bench.
Yeah.
Does oyster shell, low tide minerality for Chardonnays, and for reds, that same flavor comes out as a rusty kind of meaty bloodiness or flintiness as well.
Just a joy to drink. Like you sip on it, and it just makes you happy because there's four or five stories going on in the palate. Go into you for a second. We'll get back because I want to talk to you about the Pinot program as well.
Yeah.
How are you feeling? Like you've been doing this for so long, and now you're doing this massive release, and you're having this big event today where you're having all these people that love wine that maybe 25 years ago wouldn't spend this amount of money on Niagara Pinot, and now it's just becoming more normal. What are days like this for you, you know, when you compare back to when you started?
Well, I think when I started, I was just working on my buy-in in Burgundy and then in Oregon. And Mary and I, it's always goes without saying, and she's been there from before the beginning when we decided to go to wine school. But the thing is, when you're like a baby winemaker, all you want to do is make your stamp, make your place in the world, earn into the community, and be like maybe not even respected, but tolerated as a peer, right? And don't have too forceful opinions. And when you're in Burgundy, the big thing people might not realize is it's all laid out. So there's a real thrill in vinifying your first Nuit Saint-Georges or your first Volnay. Like I'll never forget it, or your first Meursault. You know, you have to understand they're big vineyards. Like here we share Wismar Foxcroft, great Chardonnay and Gamay vineyard. I mean, you know, Elisa and Shiraz over at Malivar put out an amazing Wismer Foxcroft Gamay Noir, which is very similar to ours. And the Wismer Foxcroft Chardonnay has been done by the great Matt Smith and Adam Lowy at Cloudsley.
Yep.
But as well as, you know, Norman Hardy's been in there, Adamo's been in there, Leaning Post's been in there. So you share vineyards a bit in Niagara, but in Burgundy, it's up the yin yang. So you can walk into one of our vineyards. I'm having a picture of Nuit Saint-Georges just north of the little town of Nuit Saint-Georges, La Petite Chalmette. And there's like 150 rows of it. And we always got for 5 years, 12 rows, 16 rows, right in the middle. It was a sweet spot. But you know what, Matt? You could go to the rows to the left of yours, taste the grapes, different viticulture. And to the right, maybe organic on that side. Ours was organic and biodynamic. Taste them all. Read reviews on them. Go to the cellars of the people. Talk to them about the crew. And you'd know a lot before making your first wine. Here, when you do a single vineyard, it's like, well, what's this going to taste like? And sometimes I sit down with writers such as yourself and bloggers, and they say to me, I say, well, do you think this tastes like Wismer Foxcroft Chardonnay? And they go, how am I supposed to know it's my first time? Mm-hmm. I said, well, it was the first time for me too, and I had an opinion, so let's go. And that's how we evolve. We listen to people when they talk back to us, not just journalists, but when people say, I see this in this wine, we have a good hard think about it. We don't say, oh, you're a budding wine lover. We think you have taste buds. If you've sensed something, I'm listening, you know, because the language of wine, as you know, can seem like purple prose one way, but it's an effort to, by everybody, whether they're very sparse with their words or whether they're very word heavy, it's an effort to try to describe something you drink. It's impossible. It's just so impossibly complex. Like the same wine with 12% and 13% alcohol would not be the same wine. It would just taste different. It would have been picked at a different time to get that extra alcohol. The flavors would be more muted and less red, let's say. So I have never gotten tired of it. I mean, I do have a collab coming up in Beaujolais, but we're not allowed to talk about that today.
That's fine.
So I'm a curious person. And when you have this many children, for winemakers, I want to say something. When you have a lot of children, you can't stand back and say, I did that, I did that, I did that. At a certain point, you just say, hey, that child is shining brightly this vintage. Not my fault. You know, it's like it's not down to you. It's something you just preserve these things and you let them grow and be the way they want to be. And I'd love to say to younger winemakers, be less technique and be more, put your ear to the ground and try to express what you hear. You know, that's a metaphor, I hope.
Of course.
I mean, you can taste the dirt too, you know. But I mean, I think the real thing to do is we've got to figure out what this whole peninsula tastes like. If we classify it later into Village and Premier Cru and Grand Cru, that's great, you know. But I mean, we don't have to. We just need a lot of single vineyards, and they need to be in Riesling as well, you know. They need to be in Cab Franc as well, all the great grapes. But as we discover what grows where, Niagara will inevitably become better known. And there's nothing wrong with blends. We do blends. We call them Les Villages because that allows us to make purer single vineyards and offer something that still has terroir at a lesser price, the Village. So, yeah, as you can hear, I'm still totally stoked.
I know. Listen, now, this is going to be a hard question for you to answer. When you talked about before, but you listen to customers and their notes and their tasting buds and that it can influence you, that screams a level of humility. You already have the curiosity and the humility. Can you take pride in knowing you have played a part, and you and Batch and Mary, but just, I find sometimes people have a hard time taking credit. They don't want to pat themselves on the back. But can you take credit in the fact that where we are now versus 20 years ago in terms of Appalachian awareness and that it is growing and vineyard awareness, that you are one of the tip of the spears of this?
Well, for sure. I mean, for sure, I feel very happy about being a part of all this and that it was right place at the right time. I remember when I got offered the job at Le Clos Jardin, the first version, because now I'm back with them since 17 for the second version, and there's a real building now and all that exciting stuff, some organic vineyards again. But when I came here in 03 with Mary, and our girls were super young, and now they're 26 and 29, you know, it's like, how did that happen? And we just wanted to explore as much terroir we could on the Jordan Bench, which is really called the 20-mile bench, but the Jordan Bench specifically, we explored the hell out of it and figured all those terroirs. I never knew that that was going to lead to also doing Vineland under Batchelder. And don't forget, I, you know, helped start Caylus with Gilles Chevalier and Gilles Bussière. So we started that, and Kelly Mason came along and made everything better. And we know her story now.
Oh, yeah.
Wonder Woman. But I guess what I'm saying is it's your part. I'm happy to be part. I'm happy to have my work life woven into the tapestry of Niagara. And I think the most rewarding thing anybody can do with any career in any domain is to do a good job and be satisfied with your work. I don't think anybody or very few people work for a legacy. Your legacy is right now. It's like when you get up in the morning and you still like that wine you made yesterday. That's your legacy, you know? And I think the very important thing is, yeah, I think it's a great job to have, but you can really keep your boots on for a long time and hand the more backbreaking jobs off and keep yourself, you know, working smart, you know? So it's something you can do for a long time, as long as you don't become a drunk and, you know, it happens in the industry, but not a lot as you might think. So people, we're in a health conscious time. So you can go a long time if you take care of yourself.
What does a good glass of, and I'll get more specific, when you're drinking a Wismer Parky Pinot Noir. Yeah. What does a good glass of Batchelder Pinot, what should it taste like?
A good glass of Pinot that comes through our cellars should taste, first of all, like where it's from. Now, you're coming in and you don't know that, right? Because in the old days, people knew their Burgundies. Now they're not only expensive, but they're rare. They're not in the LCBO. They're not in the SAC that much, the SAQ in Quebec, where I come from. So people now come in and say, oh, Niagara Pinot Noir, you're doing single vineyards, what's that? And so you can't say, well, a Wismer Park should taste a little more meaty and a little more low tide aromas of like sea life and minerality. You have to say, look, you're going to taste these 9 Pinots or these 6 Pinots. You are going to have an opinion, even if you've never read a wine column or a wine book. You're going to be able to say, well, that one's sharper and that one's more brambly, and I don't understand why that one's softer and this one appears to have higher alcohol. Neophytes can do that. I mean, they have to be wine drinkers, people who actually like wine, but they can do it. And I think a glass of wine that you have from a Pinot Noir anywhere in the world, but especially Niagara, should be fragrant. It should be somewhat, you know, the artist formerly known as feminine, not so allowed to say that anymore, but we'll just say a Pinot Noir should always be a ballerina. Mm-hmm. It tends core strength, but I would say a ballerina, as you know, has more core strength than a linebacker. I think that can be proven.
I think so.
Yeah, and so my wife's a ballerina, so Mary Delaney. So the thing is, I think that you have to get this aroma that bursts into a bouquet as you swirl your glass and as the wine opens up and warms up, and you say, this is enticing. And then what happens is over the palate, despite the medium ruby color, usually in Niagara, not deep color, we don't get them on the bench and we don't force them either. You realize that this is totally mouth filling. That's great. And as you're about to walk away from the glass, you realize it leaves you with a mineral tang at the end that isn't just acidity or tannin. That is the complete package, and that should go in your cellar for a few years. They're never going to turn your teeth red, Niagara Pinots. If you drink them too young, it's a little bit of infanticide. You're missing their whole blossoming when they're about 5 to 8 years old.
Yeah, and anything I get today, I'm going to have to put them away in the cellar. And the most important thing, I have to forget. I have to forget I bought them. I have to forget I was here. And then 3 years, 4 years down the road, if I can do my best. And so that's my goal.
Well, this is a very interesting interview, because I think every time we've spoken together, which has been many times, we've always warmed up by trying a couple of wines. And now, Matt, you have the entire Toussaint release sitting in front of you in the next room, and we're going to go through 14 white terroirs and 9 Pinots. We're doing this whole talk without you having that knowledge. You have the knowledge of other years.
Yes.
But it's going to be
revolting. I'm excited. I'm
excited. I'll taste these every day.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to try them. And maybe what I'll do is all my notes, I might record it cold open, and I'll give some of my tasting notes on this podcast at the beginning of it, and then butt in this conversation that we're having right now, just for a more complete All Things Thomas Batchelder podcast.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're at the part of our careers, Mary and I, where it's very important to have fun. And I don't mind still working hard. Our kids, they're grown. So I don't whip myself if I come home late because I spent too long with my barrels. Also, I don't come home and whip myself if the garden looks like shit because my garden is my barrels. I mean, we have 90 Pinot barrels. I mean, that's over 12 appellations. You know, it's like, what? Not even to talk about. So, you know, it's like, oh God, there's still lots of discovery to come from us here. Like we're saying we're doing less, but we're not saying we're not doing new. If you walk up to me, Matt, and I know your family's down here, and you say, hey, my wife's family has some old vine Pinot that you may not know about. I'm like, let's bring it in.
Yeah.
Let's go walk the vineyard.
Of course.
Yeah. So the things are going to keep changing. It'll be exciting, but we're just not going to try to cover the whole peninsula. We did it somewhat altruistically. We knew it would bring us a little notice, but I mean, I think the thing is now I really do know what I like to drink and what I think is distinctive. And there's some things that I don't like to drink that much, but are totally distinctive that I have to keep doing. And an example of that would be having a daughter that you thought was good for sure, had the brains to be an actuary or going to engineering school. And she's a snowboarder out west smoking weed and growing it. You know, it's like, okay, so how do I help that kid get to where they're going? Because clearly, you know, I don't know who they are quite. And so if I find a wine that I don't know who they are quite, but I admire them and other people go, what is this? I must help it to be more like itself, not less. I'm not going to try to mask it with wood. By the way, your earlier question about what do you want to see? We use Burgundian oak barrels from Burgundian forests. There's not enough oak stands in Eastern Canada or anywhere to make a solid. We need 100 years to grow those oak stands where there's only oak and they grow straight. So we might as well use Burgundy because that's our spiritual home. That's where our grapes were first, you know, isolated and evolved. But those, we use Burgundian barrels from Burgundy that are made from Burgundian forests, right? But most of them are used. And those used barrels don't impart much wood, but the new barrels renew the fleet every year, right? And we've got two sets of barrels, Matt, because like right now you're tasting 23. Those barrels have been recycled into the 25 vintage we just made while 24 sits there. 24 is now the baby that's in preschool. You know, 25 is the baby in diapers and 23 has just gone to university and we're going to see if it can get a job today.
Last question for you, because the event is starting soon. We've mentioned your name a bunch of times. I don't know if I've asked. How important is Mary to all of this, to your wife? How her impact on everything around us?
Well, you know, Mary was doing a ballet career and then had a knee injury and so went to art history school and helped take over her dad's very modest gallery that was called Artlenders. And Artlenders in Montreal and Victoria and Westmount lent you art or rented you art so you could have great stuff on your walls. But slowly, her dad was an artist and slowly it morphed into Gallery Dan Delaney. And we were young in love, Mary and I, and Mary ran it and started to turn a profit for them. And he was so counting on her. And I got into wine school. I was working for a wine magazine back then. I started as a budding journalist. I was working for Wine Tidings and La Barrique and a few other things in Montreal. And what happened was, Mary said, let's come on. We're a new couple. I'm coming to Burgundy with you, and we're going to do this. And we went to school. She studied a little more art, but she realized that she was a consummate marketing and salesperson. And so she got into selling wine for other people when we moved to Oregon after that and worked for Lemelson Vineyards, and she evolved her own career. So when we did Batch Elder, you know, we're a good couple. We can work together and we can play together and cry together. But the thing is, she's always done the logistical side. Like, we're exporting. That's great. Who does it? Mary. Like, we go overseas to make the market, but then there's that call. The wine has arrived. The papers are lost. Mary fixes it at 11 p.m. at night, and then again at 6 in the morning. So she makes Batch Elder run. I mean, she doesn't run the tasting room anymore. We have a very small tasting room with two separate tables, the Asper table that we're sitting at and the Pride table from Stan Pride, who made it out of the Clos Jardin barnwood. That's another story, 150-year-old barnwood. So we have these two funky little things and about five or six people who are so good to help us the odd few three, four weekends a month, four weekend days a month. We have three or four people who help us out running this taste room. They've drunk in the terroir Kool-Aid, and they love to pass on our passion to other people. Mary rolls through the tasting room more than I do, but, you know, she can't be here all the time. And what we're here every weekend at some point if we're in town. I can't be here all the time, man. I've got a slight big day job with the Clo and Batchelder. So that's a, I mean, that must be 60 wines. I don't even want to think how many wines it is, but we've got to keep all these and many more parcels. But, you know, I got a brain for it. It's like, you know how people just look at a label and they remember a wine, some people, and some people can show them the label 10 times, and unless it has an animal on it, they can't remember it. Oh, those Burgundian labels all look the same. Yeah. So I think that's it. I think that's pretty cool. And, you know, I'm looking forward to tasting these with you. And I hope we don't leave in any way the idea that the journey is diminished. The journey is, we're going to present a very strong lineup going forward. And it's not even we're cutting out the dross. There's nothing bad to cut out. We're just going to focus on cool things that we can maybe make a little more of. I mean, we're making 50 cases of things or 150 cases of some other great single vineyards. When you're exporting, you want to be making like 200 cases at least of things.
And we are back. The party has arrived, the tasting party. In conclusion, you and Mary have made a hell of a team. You guys make incredible wines here, and like so many others. And also because of you, now the influence you've had on young winemakers, you know, people at Cloudsley and Domaine Caylus and Kelly Mason and all that jazz. You know, you guys are a testament to wine in Niagara. And I guess we'll end here. What are you hoping the group that's tasting today? I mean, the cool thing is, again, 25 years ago, all this money, passion, they would be pouring it into Italy, California, France. But now it's here because these wines are that good. What are you hoping the group takes away from today?
Well, the group from today is a group that comes every late November, early December, and they taste through the lineup today with Matt Cause, a big honor. They take their faves back to Toronto, and we do a Christmas dinner or a pre-holiday dinner in Toronto with like 22 of their best friends, sit down, catered dinner, and you're not allowed back to the dinner unless you buy Canadian. So it started with this. I was starting Domaine Caylus, and we did a Domaine Caylus dinner. And then we started up Batchelder at roughly the same time, and so Batchelder was in there. And then we restarted the Clos Jourdain in 17 and the Clos in there. And then Kelly Mason took over from me at Caylus and went out and started her own vineyard, Mason. So it is a Le Clos Jourdain, Domaine Caylus, Mason Vineyards, and Batchelder tasting. And they're not allowed back to it next year unless they buy. And Terry Zives, the guy who pulls that all off every year. And Matt, we are going to have a blast right now.
Thomas, thank you as always for doing the pod.
Cheers.
Thanks everyone for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Apple, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.